Rod's Pulse Podcast number 76, interview with Dr. Bobby Baggio on learning megatrends.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. Hi, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back. That was a short clip by a group called Amplifico. The song is called 10P Mix. It's a talented young band from Edinburgh, Scotland, and it's one of the most played songs on the Podsafe Music Network. I thought you might enjoy it. So stay tuned at the end of my podcast when you can hear the full song. Before I get to the main topic today, I wanted to give you a couple of tidbits from my picks from the Podosphere. I'll be quick because I want to reserve the bulk of the time today for my interview with Dr. Bobby Baggio. You'll hear more about that in a moment. First, one of the news items I noticed was that Google has dropped Lively. Lively was a Second Life wannabe. According to a statement issued by Google, they decided to cease development on Lively to devote more efforts to their core business of search and advertising. Apparently, at the peak, they only had 10,000 users a week, whereas Second Life had over 500,000 a week. I also wanted to draw your attention to an article by Trent Batson from MIT. The article is entitled, "Can You Operate as a Virtual Being?" Now, those of you who teach online, you might be familiar with the conundrum that he points out, that how do you connect with something you can't see or hear? How do you read body language online? How do you get a sense that something needs clarifying? How do you know students sufficiently well to address their individual needs? So read the article to get more insight on these issues. By the way, you can get to all of these articles through my podcaster guide and e-learning news. You can find the links on my show notes. Now for my last news item, I just wanted to mention that the archives from the Pennsylvania Distance Learning Association annual meeting that I attended in November is now available up online. So if you go to my podcaster guide, you can see a link. And let me just read a couple of the titles to you. One is Beyond Role Play with Interactive Online Simulations, The Current and Future State of Distance Learning, Cafeteria Learning, Developing a la carte Learning Opportunities, Sharing E-Learning Applications with Foreign Audiences, and then the presentation by Dr. Bobby Baggio, Gazing into the Crystal Ball, 7 Metatrends and the Future of Learning. That's a good segue to the main part of my program today. Now for my interview with Dr. Bobby Baggio. She's the director of the Graduate Program in Instructional Technology Management at LaSalle University and also the CEO of Advantage Learning Technologies Incorporated. Dr. Baggio is a recognized expert in applying psychology and neuroscience to the design of instruction and learning materials, and we discuss the 7 metatrends for the future of learning. So without further ado, here's my interview with Dr. Bobby Baggio.
Okay, I'm here with Bobby Baggio. I saw Bobby give a talk at the recent Pennsylvania Distance Learning Association, and I was really interested in her presentation where she talked about the trends affecting learning, and we're going to talk about that today. But before we get started on that, I was hoping, Bobby, you could give us a little background on what you're doing these days and how you got involved with e-learning.
I certainly can. Glad to be with you today. I am the director of the graduate program for LaSalle University in Instructional Technology Management. It's a new degree, it's a Master's of Science degree, and it's offered through the College of Professional and Continuing Studies. I've been involved in e-learning now for about 7 years. My background is IT. I was director of IT for British Oxygen Corporation, but 7 years ago I started my own consulting firm, Advantage Learning Technologies, and I have the privilege of working with some wonderful clients. My specialty is how people learn, and specifically how people learn using technologies. So I've been in the corporate world for quite a while, and now I'm also in the academic world, and I am passionate, absolutely passionate about using technologies to help people learn.
Well, that's great. I think we have a lot in common. I was somewhat familiar with the Horizon report that you mentioned in your talk, but I wasn't familiar with some of the other reports on the trends affecting learning. I thought, you know, for my audience's sake, I thought it might be just like some people like to start from the back of the book. I thought it might be great to start with your conclusions, which you call the seven meta trends from a lot of the different sources that you used. And maybe we could talk about that. I know the first one was technology is improving and continuing to evolve, but alone it does not make a difference in the learning. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, this is a debate that's been going on for quite a while, but I think that we have a tendency in this field to look at technologies and look at features and look at the evolution of technologies and kind of get hung up in the glitz, you know, and it's really not about the wow, it's about the how. It's about how people learn and how we can use these technologies to facilitate learning. And one of the things that you'll hear me say over and over and over again is it is so important in the area of e-learning that we base what we do and how we develop and how we design on research for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is it's a brand new field. Another reason is a lot of things that we have done intuitively or that we do intuitively because of the culture that we've grown up in, because of the way we've learned through a system. When we apply those kinds of techniques to e-learning, it doesn't work. So technology is improving. I think we've seen a tipping point in the last 3 to 5 years in terms of what's available to us tool-wise to be able to use to help people learn. However, it really is not about the latest and greatest tool. It's about how we are using those tools to facilitate learning. You know, I always say that, you know, we can't learn them. Robert Mager said, you know, we can't teach people something that they already know. And we have a tendency to forget that the foundations of all of this stuff is good, sound learning theory, good instructional design theory. Things that work, that we know work in terms of being able to create environments, be able to create products that really facilitate the way people learn and position them. That's what we're looking to do. We're looking to position the learner in the best possible position to increase the probability of their learning.
Absolutely. That's an important point. I think we do get carried away with the bells and whistles often, and as we found out today, trying to set up this Skype call, things are not always so user-friendly, and there's still, technology still has a way to go.
You know, when I look back 5 years ago when Flash was the latest technology, and all of a sudden everybody on the web was flashing everything. And if we look at this stuff today in terms of how it's designed for learning, because we've learned a lot in the last 5 years, it looks almost funny.
Yeah, it's like back in the days when, personal publishing came around and everybody was, you know, trying every color, every font in the book. How about the second meta trend here? You say that the second one is the paradigm for what we call learning is dramatically changing. What do you mean by that?
I think it is dramatically changing, and I think it's something that we see played out over and over and over again in the research. Expectations are changing. The expectations of the learner are changing. You know, what we traditionally called learning, whether it was formal learning or informal learning or corporate learning, was usually positioned in a classroom. And it was usually top-down kind of instruction where we had a lecturer or a professor or somebody who was a subject matter expert talking to us, and we then, like sponges, absorbed the knowledge. I think as technology becomes more integrated into our system, we're starting to understand that traditional paradigm for learning, a instructor-centered, student-absorbing kind of paradigm where, you know, we talk about chalk and talk, we talk about the sage on the stage, all of those kind of instructor-led kind of paradigms, the expectation of that is really changing. And we're beginning to understand that it really is 180 degrees from what was traditionally done. First of all, we don't need experts anymore. We have the web. So we have more information out there than we know what to do with. Secondly, we're understanding that what really facilitates learning is engagement with the learner. You know, you'll hear terms like experiential learning, you know, learning through doing. All of these things are telling us that what, you know, the constructivist people have talked about is that learners construct their own knowledge. And the wonderful thing that technology helps us to do is tailor that environment for the individual learner.
I certainly agree with that. What we call learning is changing. One of the words that I've just recently added to my vocabulary is andragogy. I'm sure you've run right. across that, you know, sort of the change from pedagogy, which I understand the origin was, you know, child learning, whereas andragogy is more adult learning.
I teach a course on adult learning theory. And andragogy is a term that was developed by Malcolm Knowles. Now, I think what we've seen in the last few years is we've seen these terms become sort of synonymous. When we talk about pedagogy and we talk about andragogy, in reference to the adult learner, we're talking about the same thing, really. We're talking about theories in terms of how adults learn. And one of the interesting things he did is he at least stepped out of what was normally accepted and said, let's look at this a different way. Let's take a look at how adults learn as opposed to how we have always traditionally delivered education to children. All that being said, there's some fantastic research coming out of the University of California that is telling us that pedagogy and andragogy may not be as different as what we thought. And perhaps children really don't learn the way we've been delivering pedagogy for quite a long
Very
time.
Very interesting. Let's move on to number three here, which is, and it really has to do with what we're talking about, learner participation. Whether with Web 2.0 tools, grassroots video, or virtual communities is extremely important. And we all know that user-provided content on YouTube and other social software is becoming more important. How does that fit into the education scene?
I think it fits in because it supports the learner involvement. It supports that interaction with the content. It supports the fact that we learn by internalizing and we want to contribute. You know, there's 67,000 videos uploaded to YouTube every month. That's a phenomenal amount. You know, we have more blogs out there now. I think somebody, you know, gave me some sort of number of like 7 million are created, you know, in a specific period of time. But I mean, we have blogs coming out of our ears. We've got wikis all over the place. What this is really saying, I think, is people want to contribute. And these new social softwares are giving us the ability to form a collective intelligence, to form communities of interest out there in cyberspace that allow us to support each other in our learning so that it's no longer just an instructor-learner kind of interaction. It's an instructor-learner kind of interaction. It's a learner-learner kind of interaction. It's a learner-content kind of interaction. And then we have the interaction between the technology itself and the particular learner, whether it's a blog or a wiki or a, you know, grassroots video or a discussion, a chat room.
Yeah, it's interesting that some of the learning management system companies have taken a long time to get sort of with the program. Earlier we talked about Blackboard not having built-in wikis and podcasting, but you know, it's opened the door for third-party developers to add some more those kinds of capabilities to some of the learning management systems. Let's look at number four. Our boundaries are going away. Anywhere, anytime, ubiquitous learning is increasing. What does that mean?
You have to love education. When we don't know what to call it, we make a new word up for it. So we've gone from e-learning to m-learning, and now we're at U-Learning. And what U-Learning really is all about is anywhere, anytime, on anything kind of learning. So when we talk about ubiquitous learning, we're talking about not just learning while you're connected to the internet, but also the ability to learn on mobile devices, the ability to download information to those devices and take it with you, whether it's a video or it's a podcast on your MP3 player. But there are some important things here in terms of boundaries going away. The boundaries are going away both for universities, corporations, the learner, the people who are delivering the learning. Many, many faculty members who are new to teaching online will tell you that one of the big surprises to them is that their time is now not a 9-to-5 kind of job, that learners will call them at 10:30 at night because they're in a discussion board and they have a question. All of a sudden, they're getting telephone calls or emails from people on Saturday night at 8:30. It really is a question that we've broken down both the geographical boundaries, we've broken down the time constraints, particularly with asynchronous delivery of learning online, and with mobile devices, we've broken down the ability, you don't even have to be connected. You can download little bites of learning and take it with you and actually, do it in the taxi cab on the way to the airport.
I've heard the concept of knowledge bursts, making really bite-sized chunks of knowledge available on demand when it's required. I even ran across someone would post podcast clips that were basically a one-minute distillation of an hour lecture. So he would get right to the nitty-gritty and be able to summarize, what was in a particular lecture by giving a very short podcast. That brings us to number 5 here on your list. Which is, I think, related to what we were just talking about. Portable content that is accessible and usable is powerful. And I think that's really what we've been saying.
Yeah, that just supports what I wanted to add on the last thing. I mean, this goes back to that just-in-time learning. I've done some work with pharmaceutical companies and sales training where we've initiated podcasts so that these sales reps, right before they go into the doctor's office, can have that little burst of knowledge and take it with them as they need it, sort of, a real quick little refresher, a 5-7 minute little refresher before they go in so that they have the terms and they have the conditions and all the other things fresh in their mind right when they need it. And I think that's what this portable, the mobile learning and cell phone devices are doing for us. It's, giving us the ability to take it with us.
Absolutely. Number 6, I think there was a little controversy when you mentioned this at the at the meeting recently, and I'll read it for our audience. Number 6 trend was connecting people through the network has expanded, and tools that recognize social connections will make these connections richer and more fluid. Intelligent searching has eclipsed the need for metadata and tags. SCORM is dead, and mashups are in. Well, is SCORM really dead?
It's so interesting. I said this again yesterday, and people who really work with SCORM understand exactly what I'm saying. I don't know if it's dead yet. I also got an email yesterday from somebody asking me if I could send them some good research information on SCORM. So this person was doing some work for a power company. So obviously it hasn't died everywhere. Here's what I mean when I say this. SCORM was intended originally to help people search. It was developed by the Army, taken over by DOD. It was a way for people to search in these huge data repositories on meta tags and find reusable learning objects and hopefully be able to combine them into some form of instruction. SCORM from the very beginning hasn't worked well. And SCORM from the very beginning has been very, very loose. So if SCORM is going to work in your organization, you pretty much have to go in there and sort of customize SCORM to fit your needs. And the people who are actually working with SCORM understand exactly what I'm saying there. Now, once you customize SCORM to meet your needs, it really isn't SCORM anymore. It's your version of SCORM. So it's sort of shot itself in the foot, let's say. The other thing that's happened, though, since SCORM was invented in, I think, 1998 or 1999, we have better technologies. We have search engines that are intelligent search engines. And the best example of this, of course, is Google. So once you have search engines who can read the HTML and XTML at that level, the need for SCORM has certainly gone away. I mean, we don't really need it anymore. So I don't know if it's really going to die or it's going to morph into something else, which is quite possible, which is what somebody said to me the other night. They said, you know, Bobby, I don't know if it's really going to die, but it certainly may go underground and come back in a different way.
It reminds me of Google's approach to translation. We always thought that language translation, the system would have to understand syntax and grammar of different languages and sort of very laboriously do the translation. But apparently Google's approach is to take tons and tons of literature, you know, written in the two different languages and just matching them. You sort of brute force computation. It's right. the same approach.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the same approach. And I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind as this evolution goes forward is what's happening on the back end of this. You know, the reason Google is able to do that is because exactly what you said, the volumes and volumes and volumes of data that are out there to make that kind of brute force happen. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing with meta tags. I think that, you know, a lot of LMS vendors, a lot of people are still trying to sell the, oh, we are SCORM compliant kind of thing. But the other thing that is sort of amazing to me is if you look at the research on what SCORM does for companies and who implements it and is using it successfully and is actually searching for it and building learning around it, it's not being used. People are implementing it, but they're not using it.
Yes, yes. It also reminds me when the librarians insisted that, you know, all of our content had to be tagged with mesh subject headings, and it was so cumbersome to do that, and people found that, you know, there's other ways to search and find what you're looking for. Now, the last meta trend here is that 3D representations like Second Life and Peoplesburg, which I'm actually not familiar with, are growing and finding their way into research and training and learning circles rapidly. I'll also just mention that Google also has their foot in this now, too, with Google Lively, which seems like a sort of a very early approach to something like Second Life. What is your view on Second Life and similar programs? Do you think these are really going to, obviously it's a trend, do you think it's another one of these sort of technologies that has a lot of hope, but may just be too much technology and not enough, you know, learning going on?
No, I think it is a trend. I think it's a trend that we're going to see move faster and faster and faster. You know, like all these technologies, though, Second Life by itself is not learning. So it depends on how we design the instruction and how we construct the environment in a Second Life or wherever and how we use these technologies. I had an interesting conversation with a person who actually had implemented one of these Atlucent technologies inside their own firewall. They had their own version of a virtual world, and he put this thing up about 5 years ago, and he said, you know, it was really exciting for about the first 2 months, and then people actually expected us to do something with it. You know, the revolving doors kind of got old after a couple months, and people were like, okay, now what? And I think the same is true in Second Life. What I think is really interesting on this front, though, is how fast this technology is moving. You know, we have had Second Life. It's been around for a while by Linden Labs. It's gotten easier and easier and easier to use. You've got Google in the market now. You've got Yahoo in the market now. You can make avatars out there with programs that are free. Not only is there Peoplesburg, there's 47 of these products that I'm aware of now that are available out there. All the time getting easier to use, all the time getting easier to manipulate. And I think the possibilities of what we can do in these emerged worlds, what we can do by creating learning atmospheres in this kind of an immersion is absolutely fascinating. I think we're going to see more and more of it. I think it's going to be, you know, the old plasma TV. I think it's going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And I also think it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, I think we're going to be able to have a segment of Second Life on our cell phone. And I don't think this is far away. I think we're going to see this in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think the technology is there. One thing that always seems to be a stumbling block is the, you know, the size of these screens on little mobile phones. But what people may not realize is that, you know, it's not far off before we're going to have something like a Bluetooth device we're going to clip on eyeglasses and be able to project virtual images out in front of us and not be constrained anymore by these tiny little screens.
Absolutely. I think that we're looking at, you know, we're making the screens a little larger. The new iPhone actually has a screen that is large enough that you can fairly comfortably watch a movie or a video or engage in something like this. You know, we're always caught between that small and portable and, you know, effective and usable kind of dichotomy. But I also agree that technology is moving, and, you know, just like wireless got us away from having 9 million wires plugged all over the place, you know, Bluetooth devices that you can clip on your, you know, your eyeglasses or something will eventually, there will be the next step in this and make this even more usable. I think the possibilities, though, for what we can do with these things for learning is just phenomenal.
Absolutely. You know, it's an exciting time. I just hope the floundering economy doesn't put a dent in all this. I think there's certainly, you hear stories that in these kinds of downtimes, it does stimulate the creative juices, and you get a lot more startup companies doing creative things, and I hope we'll be seeing a lot of good things coming down the pike.
I think we will. I think we will. I think one of our challenges, particularly in higher education, is to bridge the gap. You know, bridge the gap between what people expect and what technologies will allow us to do and what has traditionally been done. And that gap is wide, and it's getting wider. And I think the corporate world has done a little bit better. Maybe it's a matter of economics. You know, maybe it's a function of an entrenched system. I'm not really sure, you know, we can point one finger and say that's what the difference is. But I think they have done a little bit better job of utilizing what we have available and going in the direction of integrating technologies into their training and learning.
Well, listen, I really want to thank you for speaking to my audience today. I would love to continue our discussion, but I think we better bring it to a close, and perhaps you'll come back again and talk to my audience again. I think you have great insight into this technology. I will certainly have links to your websites on my show notes. And again, thank you so much for speaking to Rod's Pulse Podcast.
Thanks, Rod. I enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed the interview. Again, you can find the links to more about Bobby Baggio on my show notes. And stay tuned for the full song 10p mix by Amplifico. So until next time, have a great week.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199. Opportunity like this.
she takes it over, she thinks she can. Like a drug, never feel you've had enough, had enough. Such a breath, such a breath.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.